Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network is brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. Everything Blue Jays, everything baseball. Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central at noon for a Friday, the last Friday of the regular season for the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays open a three-game series against the Baltimore Orioles tonight at the Rogers Center. You can catch the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet if you're watching it on TV. The two gentlemen to my right will be doing the honors, Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler, both of whom have signed on as a package deal for a long-term contract. 5 years. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jeff. I know Pat and I, we've talked a lot about it, and I think we're both thrilled to be back. And, you know, it's hard to imagine. I first came here in 81, and I'm still going to be here for five more years, but it's a place I love, a place that has been home to me, and I certainly have fond memories and very, very happy memories of the organization.
We've come a long way. I don't know if you know the story, Jeff.
No, what? Tell us.
I don't know what the circumstances was, but Buck was doing the games and I was doing studio work. And mm-hmm. We were in Texas, and I think it was Jim Houston had something to do, so they needed a replacement. This is about 1993 or 4 or something like that. And Buck, they said, can you slide over and do play-by-play, and we'll bring Tabler in to do, you know, the analyst mm-hmm. stuff. Never done it before. He's never done that before.
Oh, I didn't really. Oh, no. Okay.
We were brutal. Okay. It was awful.
We were brutal.
It was awful. And I'm like going, I can't do this. I'd rather go play. I can't do this. And that was, 20-something years ago?
Yeah. We were doing it in Arlington. We actually did a preview. Rick Briggs Jude was producing mm-hmm. it, and he set up a monitor, and we actually practiced the night before. And I remember he told Pat, bring some information, make some notes about the players on the team, and, you know, you'll be fine, and we'll just talk baseball. And we got through, you know, the nuts and bolts of it was my responsibility. And then Pat looks at me about the second inning and goes, I'm out of information.
I'm good. Is the game almost over?
Oh, I've got to do 7 more innings there?
Yeah. It was unbelievable. I was very soft-spoken at the time, probably still am. Mm-hmm. And Scott Moore was in the truck, and he kept turning up the volume in my ear to make me talk louder. And at the end of the night, my ears were ringing, and I'm like, what happened? It kept getting louder.
That's funny. Well, welcome back, gentlemen, and good to have you here for 5 more years. Mr. Siddle, you'll be doing the game tonight with Mike Wilner and Jerry Howarth. I think Mike's back in the booth tonight.
One more series. Hard to believe.
This is your last shot at Baseball Central at noon for this year as well. I'm going to have to make do with Barker for all of next week.
You'll be just fine.
I'm sure I'll stumble through.
Central now until?
One more week, and then what's that other sport?
Yeah, another sport. We all know what that other sport is. It's the big elephant in the room is coming, and it's good. You know, I think we're all excited about it. It's going to be a great season for them as well.
I think we are, and Hockey Central at noon will be taking its regular time slot, and they've got a brand-new studio, which is very, very cool. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We got to talk about Derek Jeter. I mean, not that we have to talk about Derek Jeter. I'm one of those people that really doesn't think it's a bad thing to talk about Derek Jeter at any time. We all saw what happened last night. Derek Jeter wins the game, an opposite field hit. It all turns out well. David Robertson might have been the happiest man in the planet when it was all said and done. But, Buck, I want to start with you because you've been around for a long time. You've played. You've managed. We always go through this. You've broadcast. You've managed. Derek was on Team USA with you as well. How would you sum up Derek Jeter?
Derek Jeter, I think he understands how blessed he is to be able to play the game. I think he was surrounded by some great mentors early in his career. Don Mattingly comes to mind. Buck Showalter was his first manager. But I think Derek Jeter is along the lines of Stan Musial and Al Kaline and Cal Ripken and George Brett and the guys that represented their team, but also represented their community and represented mm-hmm. themselves very well, day in and day out. And, you know, everybody thinks of the Tigers, they think of Kaline. Mm-hmm. And you think of the Cardinals, you think of Musial. And we're always going to think of Derek Jeter and the Yankees. And how about the irony of Mickey Mantle's last game being the same day that Derek plays his last game? But You know, people say, well, I don't know about baseball gods, but there's a baseball god. He makes things happen, and they happen to good people.
Well, it's remarkable how the evening turned out. You know, Derek Jeter coming up with the pinch runner on and the classic Derek Jeter swing. And, Pat, I actually talked to Barker about this at 9 o'clock. That swing is, to me, that's my Derek Jeter trademark, is the inside-out swing. He still has it. He's managed to maintain it. What is it about that swing? From someone who was a good hitter, what was it about that swing? What is it about that swing that makes it so special?
Well, I think it's he stays inside the ball really well. His hands stay inside the ball, and that's why he's able to cover that outside pitch. He's a big guy. I don't know if you've ever been down on the field with him. I watched him for years without being next to him, and then the first time I saw him went down on the field, I'm like, this is a big guy, 6'3", over 200 pounds, so he can drive the ball that other way. But he's got great plate coverage, and he would always think about that ball away from him first, still be able to pull that ball to left field. One of the best I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to the full package, the total package of being a baseball player and a pro, I mean, that's the first word I think of when I think of Derek Jeter. I think of a real pro and special.
Joe, you've obviously had a chance to see him up close a lot this year, covering seeing the Jays and the Yankees play. Anything about Derek Jeter surprise you this year? The way this played out, the way the farewell tour played out?
I don't think anything surprises any of us, only because Derek Jeter doesn't necessarily need or want the spotlight. This was all thrust upon him, and I think last night for me was really special because it was the first time I think I really saw this emotion. It looked like he was going to shed a tear last night, and it finally gave me this feeling this guy is human because to me, he, and I think most fans, he's legendary, and Buck just described how and why. But to see that emotion last night, and I read something where Joe Torre told him before the game, enjoy this. Enjoy this and receive these applause and the graciousness of all these people because this is how much they've appreciated you. And it's hard for Derek to do because that's just not him. That's not his makeup. So I thought that was pretty special last night. But just to watch him over the years and the way Pat described his swing, he just repeats that swing. And how classic was that to finish on that inside-out swing, base it to right field, score the game winner. To me, you can use the word pro. I think winner. This guy's just a winner.
And I, you know, it's funny. Somebody sent me an email. We've been talking about this a lot, and somebody sent me an email, just a listener, and said that, you know, he's tired of hearing all the writers always talk about Derek Jeter and, you know, and how the writers are making a big deal out of this and the club broadcasters. And, you know, he threw all the number stuff at me. And I talked about it on the radio this morning. I think for a lot of us, especially for me, I've been lucky enough to travel to cover the World Series and cover the playoffs. And I made the point that I got to the point where the Yankees are like, they were like your October family. You were going to go into the Yankees clubhouse at some point. It was always very professional. But what I found out, when I was covering the game, I started watching for Jeter in big situations. And I talked about the 2001 World Series, the flare over him, Diamondbacks win. Automatically, I just looked at Jeter, didn't see what else was going on. I just wanted to see his reaction. And I think for a lot of us, you guys who do the game, people who write the game, that's why Derek Jeter's kind of a guy he's kind of a filter for us. The way he reacts tells you how significant an event it was. The way he reacts sort of put it in context. And I remember watching him when Arizona won that game. And I think we can say if the infield had been back, he might have had a shot at that ball. And, you know, he just walked second base, made sure he touched second base, came off, just looked at the Diamondbacks. But it was like watching him come off in the fifth inning of a game at Yankee Stadium on June 12th.
Yeah,
you know, and after the game, you talked to him, and people asked him about, you know, if you were playing back, and he just said, and I remember his line, he said, Mr. T had me playing in, and he just left it at that, and he didn't say, well, yeah, if we'd been playing regular depth, I might have had a shot at it, and he just said, nope, Mr. T had me playing in, and that, to me, was Derek Jeter. It was his business. He just lost a World, or had seen his team lose a World Series game, and that was at the time where the Yankees were starting to get older and were wondering who was going to, you know, and Alfonso Soriano at that time, people were saying might be the next great Yankee, and I thought it was kind of interesting, because you learn a lot from guys like that when they're in a moment
That was a tough year, too.
That was tough.
It was 2001.
2000, it was 9/11. It was a horrible year.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of reasons. But
the thing about Derek Jeter is you hit on it when you said it was just another day. Mr. T had me playing in. He reminds you of the respect that it takes to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a line of command. There's a chain of command, and he always respect that. And to the end, he called Joe Mr. T.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if anybody has questions about how good Derek Jeter was, look at his postseason record. His postseason record is, in fact, a full season of games.
158, yep.
And it mirrors his career in every category.
Yeah.
RBIs, doubles, home runs. I mean, it's the same as he played all
the time.
It's
like a full season. It's like a full season of the postseason.
Yeah, he really has been he's been consistent.
I like the argument when people say, well, he played on the Yankees. Well, you know what? If he played on the Royals have been winning all those games.
and you know, I mean, the argument's always been, well, how much of an impact has he had? Did he really have in the Yankees winning? He was surrounded by a lot of good players. And I always make the argument, you know, all those good players, it's remarkable how many of them talk about how important Derek Jeter was to the team. And
every
that's the thing.
One of
was,
them.
At the end of the day, the people in uniform, whether they were players or whether they're opponents or whether they're managers, the people in uniform have always said, this guy's the real deal. They've always said this guy. And what I like is Derek's never said, I'm the greatest player. Most people won't look at Derek Jeter and say, oh, greatest player I've ever seen. No one has ever used the phrase the greatest anything, I think, with Derek Jeter. But guys who played the game or managed it, they all talk about how professional he was, how important he was to that clubhouse. And I mean, I'm sorry. The guys who are on the field with you, the guys who are playing against you, the guys that put your name in the lineup, if they're all saying good things about you, I'm just going to, you know, at some point I'm going to give up trying to poke holes in them.
But you know what's really interesting? Paul O'Neill wasn't Paul O'Neill till he went to New York. Tino Martinez wasn't Tino Martinez till he went to New York. Scott Brosius wasn't Scott Brosius. Chuck Knobloch. You look at the cast of characters, and it brought out the best of them when they went to New York.
I mean, I always think of David Justice. I remember David. I was sitting in Minnesota. It was Oakland and Minnesota, and David Justice had announced he was retiring from the game before the playoffs. That was during the workout day, so they had a news conference set up, and I can't remember which writer I was sitting with, but we were sitting down, and you know, David Justice is up there talking, and a guy looked at me and said, "When the hell did this guy become one of the grand old men of the game?" And I said, I think it's when he went to New York.
Yeah.
He went to New York and won, and it was instant. It was like all your reputation was just burnished. You played for the Yankees, and part of that was Derek Jeter.
Mm-hmm. I think the last question you have to ask yourself when you're talking about Jeter, for a couple of thoughts. First of all, you know, we had a chance to watch some of the greatest players mm-hmm. ever, Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Johnny Bench. I don't want to leave anybody out, but great players. Derek Jeter's going to be gone next year. We're going to wish that we talked more about him and talked more about him because he's going to be out of the game. That's number one. So your argument, like, well, you're talking too much about him.
Mm.
I love talking about him because next year we're going to go, wow, I wish Derek Jeter was still in the ballgame here.
Yeah.
Last thing, the question you want to ask yourself, if you're playing the seventh game of the World Series in a do-or-die situation, who do you want playing shortstop for you? I'll go all time. Who do you want playing shortstop for you? I got to go with Derek Jeter. He's going to come up clutch. He's going to win the game for you somehow.
It is Baseball Central at noon. Jeff Blair, Joe Siddle, Pat Tabler, and Buck Martinez. I do want to talk a little bit about the Blue Jays. They are wrapping up the regular season. First of three games against the Baltimore Orioles tonight. Baltimore is already going off to the American League East. They're the American League East champions. They'll be going to the playoffs. What's going to be your takeaway from the 2014 Blue Jays? Opportunity lost, do you think?
Mine will be not quite good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Built too much reliant on the home run. May was much better than they were. August was much worse than they were.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to get to a point where they can win games without hitting home runs and get back to... You know, and the pitching made dramatic strides. I think the bullpen, if you look at the bullpen early in the season, it didn't perform very well.
Mm-hmm.
But there were circumstances. You know, Casey Jansen was out. It was cold and guys, you know. But everybody had to play in the same conditions. But I just think when you really get to it, they're just not good enough.
There has to be. There's too many holes right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went into spring training saying who's going to be our fifth starter, and that finally got figured out somewhere during the season. Who's going to be our second baseman? I remember that one in spring training. I don't think that has ever been answered in the last 6 months. Who's going to be the second baseman? They've tried so many different people there. Next year, you have a possibility of having three or four questions. Mm. Just next week, it could be who's the closer? Who's your left fielder? Who's your second baseman? I think there's still a lot of questions, and I think this offseason is going to be humongous for the Blue Jays. It's going to there's so many big decisions that have to be made. I think it's good. I'm going to be reading the paper every single day because I think there's going to be mm-hmm. news every single day.
Joe, what do you take away from this year?
Very similar. I think it's certainly a missed opportunity, but like Buck said, I don't think this team was as good as we saw in May. They mm-hmm. were playing way over their heads, and I think everybody can agree with that. Nor were they as bad as what we saw in August. But when you're in the thick of things and you let it slip away, you feel like it's a failure and a disappointment. It has to be. But just like they mentioned, yes, I'm not sure. When you look at some of the other teams that are going to the playoffs, namely the Baltimore Orioles, that is just a really good baseball team, a really balanced baseball team. They can hit the ball out of the park, but they also find other ways to score runs. They're pitching without a real headliner in the rotation. They just keep coming at you. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, their bullpen. And to me, in the playoffs, boy, that bullpen is huge. I look at a team like the Tigers right now, and they've really struggled. They've had a terrible bullpen all season. But this is the type of team that could sneak up on you in the playoffs because they do hit the baseball. And with that starting rotation, look what Justin Verlander did the other day. When that curtain goes up, Justin Verlander seems to show up. So despite what happened all season long, those are the kinds of guys that have been there. These are experienced veterans. Mm-hmm. They have not won the big one. They've been there, but they have not won it. There's got to be a lot of hungry people in Detroit. So I look at the Tigers. I look at the Orioles. Look at the Angels. Those, to me, are teams that are just they're just better than the Blue Jays.
I wrote in Sportsnet.ca today. I just weighed in on John Gibbons' status, and I said, I not only do I think he's going to come back, I think he deserves to come back. How do you guys feel about that?
Oh, I do, too. I think when you look at what he's done with all of the injuries and the ability to mix and match players and arguably he's got the best out of all of them. And mm-hmm. When you think of that month of May, Pilar and Ghost were doing a lot of the playing, and they had a 21-win month. And I think John is an even-keel guy, and a lot of people say, you know, he's not really fiery enough. He's fiery as hell. Mm-hmm. But he's low-key. He knows what he has, and he tries to manipulate it. And I always get, it's interesting how people say, well, why would he put that guy in there? Because he's put a lot of thought into it, mm-hmm. and he thinks mm-hmm. it's his best opportunity to win. Managers don't sit around the clubhouse thinking, well, how am I going to screw this guy, and how am I going to keep that guy out of the lineup? They think about, how in the world am I going to win? And sometimes it was a tough question.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for me, the other thing, too, and, you know, I don't know how much credit actually falls on John's desk for this, but first of all, this team's win total is kind of what I thought it would be going into the year. I didn't have these guys winning the wild card. I had them maybe fourth. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought Tampa was going to win the division. I thought Baltimore might be behind these guys. Their win total's kind of what I thought it was. The offense, they still live and die with the home runs. The bullpen I thought would be a strength. But the one thing I didn't see is that the rotation, the young guys in this rotation would be where they are right now. And I don't know how much of that you credit John Gibbons with, but if you're going to criticize him and blame him for stuff, I think you have to look at the stuff that worked out and say, in the very least, he's kind of created that culture where Drew Hutchison's going to have, what, 30, going to make 32 starts this year? I didn't think he was going to make 32 starts. Marcus Stroman's had a good year. Aaron Sanchez, I don't know what Aaron Sanchez is going to do next year, whether he's going to start or close, but I know this. Aaron Sanchez is going to go home and think, I had a major league manager have a lot of faith in me. He put me in the game late to save a game, a Mark Burley game. I think John Gibbons has done a pretty good job on balance.
He's done a great job. In my mind, I've seen just about every single game this year. And the way he handled the bullpen in certain situations, the way he handled the pitching staff, I think he and the coaches all have done a great job with this ball club. You have to single out. They come to the ballpark and they're ready to win. And, you know, we don't see half of the things that go on. Okay, but mm-hmm. there are things that go on in that clubhouse that we don't know anything about that the manager has to deal with, and he deals with it the right way. He's a tough guy. If you know, yeah, he gives you that kind of thing. Gibby's a tough guy, and he can get tough on those players too. I think he's done a great job. He definitely deserves to come back.
on some of the examples we've talked about too earlier in the season. If you think back, and I think it was in Philadelphia where Hutch, he threw him back out there. I think it was for a seventh or eighth inning. So those are things that we totally forget about. It was long ago, but those are things for a young pitcher, and you talk about having faith in a young pitcher. Can you imagine the confidence Drew Hutchison gathers from that evening alone moving forward? And those are the things that come in handy, I think, later on in the season. I'll be the first one to say, I thought Hutch had hit the wall. I thought he was done for the year.
I think we all did.
And I talked to Hutch every time I talked to him. How do you feel? I feel great. I mean, he's a perfectionist. If he doesn't go nine scoreless innings, it's not a good day. But that's a great attitude. And, I mean, those are the things that we don't always see. And we talk about numbers all the time in this game. That's why you can't always talk about numbers. There's a lot of other variables out there. And I think some of those variables are a credit to John Gibbons and his coaches.
It's Baseball Central at noon. Jeff Blair, Joe Siddle, Buck Martinez, and Pat Tabler. The Jays will probably not have Melky Cabrera back. Colby Rasmus probably won't be back. They still need a second baseman. So they've got issues going around the lineup. But I want to ask you, gentlemen, about Jose Reyes, because I think it's become apparent to a lot of us that Jose Reyes is not right now. I don't think he's a shortstop on a playoff team. I think his game has really deteriorated. What do you do with Jose Reyes if you're the Jays? You know that you haven't talked to him yet about shifting positions. He's got, what, $22 million a year for the next
three.
What do you do?
Yeah, that's going to be maybe one of the biggest questions they have to resolve at the offseason. I think we all saw it playing on an artificial surface with the quickness it has and everything else has created a problem for him. And, you know, he's played a lot, and this year he stayed healthy outside of that first disabling injury. But it is a problem. And if you're going to win in this ballpark the way it's configured right now, you've got to get better athletes. You've got to get guys that can track it down and have bigger range, longer range in outfield, especially the infield. And you saw with Goins at second base how much better the team was defensively. Mm-hmm. It was dramatic, his ability to turn double plays. And now, we were joking the other day, if Ryan Goins could hit like Buck Martinez, he'd be the everyday shortstop.
Wait a minute. Let's don't go that far. Wait, hold on.
If he could hit 220, he'd be all right.
That's true. He would be. He would absolutely. Well, I mean, the glove was ready for the majors last year.
He's a terrific defender. I didn't realize he was as good as he is.
Yeah, yeah. The plays that he made and the turns that he made, the double plays.
Tough as nails.
Spectacular, you know.
Hangs in there against the toughest.
Yeah.
The good teams turn those tough double plays and make defensive plays up the middle.
What do you do with Reyes? Do you hope that maybe, you know, the one thing I didn't mention, Joe and Pat and Buck, you get Brett Laurie back. You know, he's going to be either at second or third, so that helps Reyes a bit. Can you get by with Laurie at third, Reyes at short, and Goins at second? Is that enough to compensate for the shortcomings in Reyes's game?
You know, I don't know if we had this discussion earlier this season when Brett Laurie was playing third base, because of his range, Reyes could cheat up the middle and catch the balls up the middle. I don't remember having this conversation. People say, well, can't you just move Jose to second base? I don't think that's the answer either, turning the double plays and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what the answer is. That's why we're not the general manager.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it needs to be addressed at some point in the offseason.
Yeah, and I think Brett Laurie, after watching this team this entire season, when I look back, that to me is almost a turning point, only because of his defense. His defense really solidifies things. With Brett Laurie at third base and Ryan Goins at second base, they can't cover everything that goes to short, but if Jose just makes the plays at him and you're not asking him now to make spectacular plays, that really solidifies the defense. And then if you have like a Ghost Pilar combination going and Dalton Pompey's in that mix now in center field, all of a sudden, I like the defense, and let's remember, that defense really helps a pitching staff, especially a pitching staff that's not going to lead the league in strikeouts, you know, with a Mark Burley out there. And you look at the Orioles, solid pitching, solid defense, and that defense can really help your pitching. So Brett Laurie back immediately, and of course, he's got to stay healthy and stay on the field, but with him at third and Ryan Goins at second, I'll take that every day. So you have Ryan Goins hitting ninth, and you hope he hits 220, like you said, Buck, and if he doesn't, I'll still take him out there every inning of every game. His defense alone raises his batting average.
The problem you have in this generation of GMs and front office people is that there's not a way you can quantify the impact of the defense. But when you talk to a pitching staff, they'll tell you immediately. Mm-hmm. And that's the one difference. If you break down the Orioles and the Blue Jays man for man, when they're all healthy, when you got Lindon, Melky, and all of that, the teams are very similar. But when you start adding Machado at third and Hardy and then Jones and Weeders and the defense, they got five gold glovers on the field. And that's the difference. I mean, the pitching staffs are the same. When Mark Burley got off to his great start, every game we'd turn down there and Lurie's taking away a double.
Yeah.
Lurie's turning a double into a double play. And Mark Burley will tell you that right away. He said, I asked him how good he was, and he said he's the best I've ever seen at third.
Yeah.
And you could take all the numbers. Again, this is a numbers game, but take all your numbers aside, your defensive metrics, all the stuff they get into. We've watched a lot of baseball games this year with our eyes. I don't care what the numbers say. I'm just telling you right now, if Brett Lurie's playing third and Ryan Goins at second, this is a very good defensive team, especially with
Goins. And Jose Reyes is a lot better.
Yeah, and it
makes him better.
And it does. It does. They can Lurie can go to his left a little better. Yeah. Ryan can go up the middle a bit. So now Jose just make the plays that are hit at you. You know, if a ball gets past you to your right or left, okay, you can live with it. But it just increasingly makes that defense better, and then you're pitching better.
What are we going to see from Aaron Sanchez next year? Because I've been pounding about the closer and John Gibbons is more and more
he's waffling more lately. But you know what, one thing we have to remind ourselves is you can't get overwhelmed with September. You can't put so much stock in September. And Dalton Pompey, pitchers don't even care who he is. He's throwing to him, and he's gotten a nice start, and he's played well, and I love the kid, and I think he's going to be a great player. But you can't get excited about Sanchez closing these games out. I mean, they were meaningless games, basically, in September.
Right.
Now, I think the one thing I always go back to, and Pat knows this, when CeCe Sabathia and K-Rod were both free agents at the same time, CeCe got $160 million, and K-Rod got $40 million.
Yeah.
In the same
more valuable.
Yeah.
Who's more valuable?
Oh,
more
yeah,
valuable.
Absolutely.
And you know what? What do we always talk about? Wins by a starter. Wins by a starter. Well, I think if you put these guys together and have some combination of Dickey, Burley, Hutchison, Stroman, Sanchez, Nolan, it goes Hap, on and on and on. Hap.
Yep.
Jay Hap has been terrific.
Yeah.
And now, and that's how you run prevention and figure out. And that's why I say you got to change the personality of the offense and shift gears a little bit. It's not about how many times you knock it out of the ballpark, because here we are, right at 500 again.
And
among the leaders in home runs.
Among the leaders in home runs, exactly.
Yeah.
What do you want, 180 innings from Sanchez or 50?
See, Gibbons told me that. That's the first thing Gibbons said, and then I kept asking him 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. He
starts to waffle a little
starts
bit
to
now,
waffle a bit.
Well,
but he's in survival mode, too.
I see him come in, and he did a nice job the other night holding that runner on, then picking off James Jones. I mean, that right there, and again, it's only September, but that really showed me a lot. That surprised me a little bit at how well, and I talked to him the next day, and he's working on that and changing his holds and throwing over and making that good throw. He referred to the bad throw he made in Tampa trying to pick off, I think, DeJesus, or say he threw it in the stands. Yeah. So he knew that he had to make sure he made a good throw. He's a young kid talking about making these adjustments right now. That's very impressive.
Do you want to see that six, seven, eight innings a night or one?
Yeah.
No,
I want to see
he's
seven
a baseball
or
player first and foremost.
Yeah. I think ultimately he'll start. And they've got Cecil, they've got Loop. You can put together a bullpen, I think.
I think Graveman's made a big impression.
Made a big impression.
Good strikes.
Good.
He's calm.
And he's experienced. You can see he's a college kid with experience, and he feels like he belongs here.
And you know what? There's going to be 10 guys we're not even thinking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think your question about the infield, how much offense do you need at second base, depends on who's going to play center, who's going to play left, who's going to be your DH, who's going to be your first baseman.
You can have a hole at the bottom of the lineup, maybe even 8-9, but you can't be having holes at 5-6-7-8-9, and that's been the issue, of course.
No, if the Jays can get some more offense, I think you find room for Ryan Goins. But otherwise, as Pat said, it's going to be an interesting offseason.
It's going to be very interesting.
It's a big offseason for this team. Gentlemen, I really appreciate you doing this.
Great to be with you.
Again, congratulations. And on a personal level, thanks to both of you for those 9 a.m. interviews on the Jeff Blair show, especially when
on the road.
On the road.
We went back to sleep.
As long as you don't fall asleep when I'm talking to you. And believe me, that has happened. And I've actually been at the other end of the line doing an 8 o'clock interview while I've fallen asleep while I'm talking to the person. So it's greatly appreciated.
You're welcome. It's a great joy to be with you, and hopefully we'll be doing it before you realize that it won't be that long once
again. Yeah, well, opening day is spring training, I should say, is what? How many months away?
In hockey, it's puck drop. What do we call it for baseball around here?
First pitch.
Pat Taubman and Buck Martinez, thanks so much. And again, congratulations, and have a great offseason.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Joe Siddle sticking around, and Joe Siddle and myself will be back. This is Baseball Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central at Noon. As always, we are brought to you by Home Hardware. It is Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle, and it is time for the Ask the Expert segment. In other words, ask the guy sitting next to Blair. In this case, it's Joe Siddle. Today's question is from JJB. No relation to me. Over the past 2+ seasons, everyone has focused on starting pitching, bullpen, or defense as the reasons behind the Blue Jays' demise. But if you step back and really think about it, every extended skid seems to be sparked by poor offensive production. Yes, every year they seem to be near the top in homers and scoring, but it's never consistent. What do the experts think? That from JJB. Mr. Siddle?
Well, it's a great question, first of all. Second of all, I'm not sure I totally agree, because I think when I look back, and I'm not pulling out any numbers here, but when I look back at some Blue Jays losing streaks this year, I recall most of them being pitching and hitting deficient. The pitching has gone south. Now, there's times when they've pitched well and not scored runs. That happens to every team in baseball. That happens to the Orioles and Angels. That we say that's baseball. Well, it is. That's baseball. You're not going to hit. You're not going to do anything consistently for 162 games, I don't think. Your starting pitching can be overall great for most of the year. I'll guarantee you there's times throughout the season that some good starting staffs have hit some ruts. Bullpen's the same thing. It happens. I think what happened with this team, though, is clearly the bullpen was a real issue this year. There was times when you look at the numbers, I mean, even the pitching numbers, it's not like they're tops in the American League. Look at ERA for the Blue Jays. They're not way up there. I think you need a balance. The Blue Jays offense, numbers-wise, looks good. It looks good because they're up in the top 5 or 6 categories of almost every offensive category. So you'd think this team is, well, you're right. The question is exactly right on that. They've certainly had their ruts. They're not consistent for 162 games, and they're quite streaky. And then when they're streaky, they're on fire for a month, and then those bats go to sleep for a month. Nobody likes it. It is the nature of the business. It does happen. How do you fix that? Well, maybe by becoming more well-rounded hitters, but I think you fix that by just becoming deeper, and that helps you become more consistent. Again, it's very hard to be consistent for 162 games. I think the starting pitching, when it's good, and they're hitting as well, that's what win streaks are made of, and we saw that back in May.
You know, people talk about the need for this to be a more balanced offense, and I agree. I mean, look, it's homer heavy, third most homers in the majors, and a .500 record. But I wonder if maybe what doesn't need to happen is home runs are fine, but I'm not certain I want everybody 1 through 9. Trying to hit a home run. I've got guys 3, 4, 5 that can hit home runs. I like Melky Cabrera in the second spot. Melky can hit home runs, but he can also hit a double. He can take the ball the other way. I think what you need in the bottom of the order, you need it's almost like you need guys who can play a different style of baseball in the bottom of the order, so that maybe use the small ball to get you to the point where the big boppers are coming up.
Well, I think most lineups are constructed that way. There's not too many lineups that are just home run hitters right through. And when you look at this Blue Jays lineup, when everyone is healthy, this lineup is a very formidable American League lineup with Reyes leading off. We had Melky, Jose, Edwin, Lynn, Navarro, Lurie. And that's getting, that's a very deep lineup. And at the beginning of the season, you had Colby batting in that eight, maybe Goins ninth. That's a very good lineup. I'll take that lineup any day. But what's happened throughout the course of the season is now you have to deal with some injuries. And when you lose Edwin for a while and then Lynn goes for a little while, and then once Melky left, of course, too. But those are huge holes. And when you're missing holes in the middle of your lineup, those are big holes. Those are guys you really rely on. And I think we talk about Brett Laurie's defense, but he was quietly putting up some pretty big offensive numbers, too. And I think it was more in the sense of the power and the RBIs, the runs he was driving in. Those are big losses in the middle of the lineup. And that's hard to replace. You don't replace that necessarily with bench players.
No, and I thought, I know we've talked about this, but I thought the other thing that was really noticeable when Brett Laurie was gone is that there was, and I know this is going to drive numbers, folks, nuts, but there was just no energy there. It was...
Well, not scoring runs will really sink a lot of energy out of people. And you know, anytime you watch a team that's struggling offensively, and the Seattle Mariners are a classic example. If you watch a team like that, they're pretty flat for a few days to, against the Blue Jays, weren't they? I mean, when you're not hitting, that is just one thing that really sinks a team, because it seems like you're just going out there and it's a 1-2-3 inning or an easy inning for the pitcher every inning, and that is pretty deflating. And I think going back to this question, you look at teams like, I know the Tigers relied heavily on the long ball last year, and they were slow. I mean, they were station to station. I mean, they took four hits to score runs some days, but they got to the World Series. I mean, they went pretty deep. So you can have success. Now, to win a World Series, what does it take? I don't think anybody can answer that question, because quite frankly, what I think it takes, number one, to get to the playoffs and then possibly to win a World Series, you need a lot of special things to happen. Boston had an offense and their pitching last year, but they had a lot of special things. I think there's some special things happening in Washington. I think there's some special things happening in Pittsburgh and
Baltimore
and Baltimore. So when you look at this Blue Jays team, is it, I think the beginning of the season, it's constructed okay. It's just now you need everybody to really have those special seasons. And that's what playoff runs are made of.
Was May an outlier? The month of May, was that an outlier? I mean, obviously 21-9, look where they are, it's an outlier, but that was when we saw the Jays at the best.
At the best. And I think it was an outlier, because, and we talked about it when Buck and Pat were here, I don't think they were that good, but I also don't think they were as bad as August. And so unfortunately, they're somewhere in the middle there. This is a team, seriously, that fought for consistency all year. But again, you know, John Gibbons called his team an extreme team several times this year. They were either really good or really bad. And when it was going good, they were firing on all cylinders. Pitching was good. The hitting was good. That's what I mean. And then the losing streaks, everything was bad. Now, when you're pitching well, you can have struggles with your offense and win those 3-2 games, 2-1 games. But that's not generally how the course of the season is going to go. You want to be, I always look at the numbers at the end of the year. And most teams, when you look at their staff ERA, when you look at their team, the number of runs they've scored, you kind of need to be in that middle of the league or better in both. Seattle is an extreme team. They pitch really well, but they don't score any runs. Well, that's why they're fighting to get in the playoffs. If they could be a decent offensive team, that's what, the way you want to be built. The other teams, we talk about the Orioles, and I keep talking about them because they're in this division. So the Blue Jays should be looking at the Baltimore Orioles and saying, what do we need to do to be more like them? They just won this division, and they took off with it. Well, they do everything pretty well. They're a solid team. They pitch, starting pitching. Their bullpen is solid. Their offense is solid. They play good defense. I mean, that's who you want to emulate. That's the team. Now, you can try to construct a winning roster in baseball, but you just, you never know. You think you can put together a $200 million roster that you think you got all your bases covered, but you might come in third place. So that's why, I mean, you can do what you want in terms of constructing a roster, but ultimately you need some very special things to happen. You need some players to have some special years.
Safe to say that if I asked you for your Jays MVP this year, because this is the last time we'll have you on, Bautista?
Jose Bautista. He has really been something else. This is the first year I've gotten to watch Jose Bautista play every day. And he is remarkable. And I think the one thing to me that sticks out for him, and we talk about offensively, obviously, but the defense is spectacular too. He's really run down some balls in the outfield. Good arm, accurate arm. But offensively, I just, to see how multidimensional he is, he's not just a home run hitter. He doesn't just hit for average. He really does it all. Getting on base, the walks were off the charts. And this is a very unselfish player. See him go the other way a little bit. And I talked to him the other day about that. You know, two outs, nobody on. If the shift is on, I'll take my base hit that way. Try to get on for Edwin. And he's done it really all year. He has been really something special to watch.
He's been your most valuable pitcher.
Most valuable pitcher.
Yeah.
who is most valuable to this team, I'm going to say Mark Burley.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say Mark Burley because of the first half that he had leading to being an all-star. Really, I think, held things together for a team that was in a playoff hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly surprised me. Maybe surprised himself. I don't think he thought he was going to put up those numbers all year. And he joked in the first half saying, you know, it's not going to be like this all year, guys. I'm not going to win 27 games. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Mark Burley. He's really kept things together early, and he's just such a tremendous guy to have, and especially at the front of this rotation. And we've always talked about the younger guys, the Hutchinsons, the Stromans, that look up to him. But I think with the first half that he had, and he certainly hit his lull, but then he's caught his second wind at his ripe age of 35. But I'll say Burley.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody with the organization. We were talking about what might need to be done in the off season, and I was mentioning we're going through the whole Dickie Burley thing and how you may have to trade one of the pitchers to get somebody, and it's a classic argument. Dickie's probably the guy you could get the most for, but he's probably the guy you'd like to have just because he's cost effective. It's $12 million. Burley is a bigger contract. He's the guy that you might like to trade more than Dickie, but what are you going to get in return? And the guy I was talking to said, he said, I don't know if I want to trade Mark Burley. And I kind of looked at him, and he said, look, we're going to have Hutchison, Stroman, Sanchez in some form, whether as a closer or probably a starter. Who knows what happens to Daniel Norris? We need Mark Burley, even a diminished Mark Burley. Even if Mark Burley gives us 187 innings instead of 200, just having him there to sort of show those guys how it's done, to continue to show them how it's done, is vital.
And that's what you cannot put a price tag on or a number on. And that's why whatever Mark Burley does next year, if he's in this Toronto Blue Jays rotation, he is going to help this team in a big way for the reasons you just stated. So never mind the salary, never mind how many wins he's going to get. Of course, you want some good production from him, but those are the intangibles. Those are the things that don't show up on paper, in that clubhouse, on the team plane, in the team hotel, taking guys to all those extraneous, all those outside things that you don't even think about. To me, you can't put a price tag on what Mark Burley brings to this team.
Well, I was going to ask you who is Rookie of the Year. I think we can just probably assume it's probably Marcus Stroman. But I was actually going to nominate you for Rookie of the Year. It's your first year as a club broadcaster, an inspired selection. Felipe Alou told me one time you'd make a great manager. He did not tell me you'd make a great broadcaster. It's been a lot of fun having you on. I've really enjoyed this. I know I've enjoyed listening to you. I know fan reaction has been great. You've had a lot of fun doing these games this year, haven't you?
I have. It's been very enjoyable. And, the circumstances that brought me to this job everybody's well aware of them. And it's the way this season has gone. This has been a tremendous outlet for me. It's been a tremendous release probably for me. And it's a game that I've always loved, and you said, Felipe, I was eyeballing a future in baseball in some way, shape, or form. It was not broadcasting, but I enjoy it greatly, and I remember sitting and watching a lot of ball games in past years on the family room couch with my kids, and we would talk and joke, and they would say that I would say things sometimes before the broadcaster would, and I said, well, it would be a great job someday, but I mean, there's only 30 of them in the world. There's not a whole lot of availability there. And here we are, Major League Broadcaster.
Well, the best thing, unlike a manager, you're never wrong when you're a broadcaster.
Well, I appreciate it, Jeff. This has been a lot of fun, and thanks to you as well.
No, it's been great. Like I said, I've really enjoyed working with you this year, I'm looking forward to hearing you many, many more years. You've been a terrific addition to the team, and just when I thought we'd reached our quota of catchers. We get another one. Joe, thanks so much for doing this.
Much appreciated, Joe.
That's it for Baseball Central today. The final weekend of the regular season. 3 games against the Orioles for you. I think they're giving away a warm hat or something on Sunday at the Jays game. The Orioles going to the American League, going to the playoffs as the American League East champions. The Jays playing out the string, but you'll be able to see those games on Sportsnet. Listen to them on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Joe, Mike, and Jerry will have the call of the game for you. On the radio, Pat and Buck will have the TV and for you. And for Pat Tabler and Buck Martinez joined us earlier, and for Joe Siddle, this is Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us today. We'll be back. Got another week of Baseball Central at noon with Kevin Barker sitting in for Joe Siddle. Have a great weekend, everybody.
great day. Yeah.